Welcome to Encore. This is a very special edition of Encore. We're going to be listening to the Swamp Pop interview that CSET did for their In Your Own Backyard series that they have at Vermilionville every second Tuesday of the month. And this past interview for August, they had Johnny Allen, Rod Bernard, and Shane Bernard talking about Swamp Pop. And Johnny and Rod shared a lot of their old stories and their history that they have together. So we'll be listening to that and some of the music that they played that was popular back in the day. But first, I want to talk about CSET's fundraiser they're having this coming Saturday, September 15th. They're having their Archive Aid 9 this year. It's a fundraiser for the Cajun and Creole Archives. And there'll be a lot of great music happening at the Blue Moon Saloon, September 15th, 7 p.m. And on the main stage, they're going to have the Rec Street Rounders, Les Malfecteurs, and Balfa Toujours. Goldman Thibodeau will also be there, as well as Balfa Toujours and David Greeley and friends. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope to all see you there supporting the archives. I'll be there later in the evening. But it's going to be a really fun event. We're going to get started with the interview. Shane is going to start talking, and he's going to give us a little bit about his history, Shane Bernard. He'll give us a little bit about his history and how he came in to being really interested in Swamp Pop. So we'll start with that.
I grew up around Johnny and guys like Warren Storm and Skip Stewart and Tommy McLean. And the way that I came to write this book about Swamp Pop is I was in the master's program at UL when it was USL, and I went to see my professor, Carl Brazzo, and I said, I think I want to write my thesis on the Civil War along the Bayou Teche. And he says, well, you know, other people have already written about that. Why don't you write about something nobody else has ever done? I said, like what? He says, well, what about the music that your father and his friends play, that Swamp Pop music? And I thought, well, that's a great idea. It sounded like way too much fun, though, you know, but I never would have thought of that. And it worked out. And I did some archival research, but a lot of times I went out and interviewed these guys in, you know, smoky bar rooms at night, and it was very untraditional research. And, you know, sometimes they'd be drunk, sometimes they'd, not you, but sometimes they'd have some woman hanging on their arm that I knew wasn't their wife. And it was a lot of the interview tapes, because I taped all these interviews, and you can hear live music playing in the background, because it might have been backstage at, you know, Slicks in St. Martinville or wherever. And so it was a lot of fun. And that book came out in the mid-90s. So what is Swamp Pop music? It's a term that seems to be used somewhat loosely these days. I see it referred to as, you know, referring to all kinds of music, including the music of Creedence Clearwater Revival and Tony Joe White, but I don't think that's really what it is. It's more music from South Louisiana, and it's a combination of Cajun, Zydeco, Swamp Pop, and I think what I ask you to do, while I excuse myself for a second, talk about what you think Swamp Pop is, and if you like the term Swamp Pop. And I kind of know the answer already for one of you, but...
Well, Johnny, that's a good picture of you up there, I'll tell you.
I don't wear a crown, Rod. You're talking about the guy with the crown on, I'm assuming.
With the white hat, yeah.
Yeah, right, okay. We kid each other all the time. This has been going on since 1958.
I'm not kidding. That's a good picture.
Right, Rod. Swamp pop music is actually a term that was originated in England. Not here in Louisiana, but in England. By a guy by the name of Bill Miller. He was writing an article, and up until that point, the music was just known as South Louisiana music, and he thought that this was too general a term, so he shortened it and called it swamp pop music. And then John Brovin wrote a book called South Louisiana, The Music of the Cajun Bayous, and he had a section in there on swamp pop music, and the term just stuck after that. I haven't heard the term South Louisiana music in years and years.
Those are both British guys, right?
Right. Bill Miller and John Brovin.
So oddly enough, you know, this music from South Louisiana was named by some guys from England.
Yeah, they know more about us than we do about our own selves.
And do you like the term swamp pop, Johnny?
Yes. In a sense, yes, except one time I got kind of aggravated with a politician in Baton Rouge. I'm not going to name names. He said, this was in the advertising. He said, I always thought that swamp pop was a drink bottled and made in Lafayette, Louisiana. So I answered him kind of in an ugly way. He said, check around. You have some constituents that have million-selling records in your voting district. You probably never heard of John Fred. I guess you've never heard of Dale and Grace. And I went on and named quite a few others. I hope he felt bad after he read the article. But anyway, swamp pop, I like the term. Rod?
Yeah, Dad, what do you think of it?
I don't like it, never did like it, never will like it. I don't know what pop has to do with the music we play. I don't know why it has to be named music. It was rock and roll music when we recorded it back in the late 50s. What I don't like about it is that people say swamp pop music died in the 50s and 60s, but yet Fats Domino and Little Richard and Elvis Presley, and I'm not comparing us to them, but I'm just saying their music never did really die. I hate for them to talk about our music as music that died in the late 50s. When we went in to record, this should go on forever, we went in to record a rock and roll song. When Dale and Grace recorded I'm Leaving It Up to You, they went in their studio to do a rock and roll song. And it was all called rock and roll music back then. Some people will take any song, and as long as they record it and put a saxophone or two saxophones in the background and a piano playing what's called triplets, which is clank, 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 and then they break right there, they say that's swamp pop music. I don't understand that. I don't understand if that's swamp pop music. What is it that Johnny records so successfully, which is swamp pop music?
With Promised Land, for example, which I'm going to play toward the end of the presentation.
Promised Land was number one in England, and he earned a gold record for it. And he had a Cajun accordion playing right in the middle of it. Did that make it a swamp pop?
Anyway. I had to come up with a definition of swamp pop for my book. So to me, it was Cajun music, Zydeco, country and western, rhythm and blues, and rock and roll music all rolled up into one. And I think that of all these influences, it was the Cajun and Zydeco that are the most important, because that's what separates swamp pop music from New Orleans rhythm and blues. Otherwise, I think it would just be sort of a clone of New Orleans rhythm and blues, and it's not. It's different. So let me play this clip of Matilda right now. And again, you know, there are some music writers who say that there can't be a fast swamp pop song. It all has to be slow, melancholy ballads, and I don't agree with that either.
want my baby back again.
That's considered the swamp pop anthem. And, you know, going back to my first slide and talking about who created swamp pop, these guys were all born around 1940, say between 1935 and 1945, as far as the first generation of swamp pop musicians is concerned, the pioneers of it. And they all came of age in the 1950s. And in many instances, they started playing Cajun and Zydeco music as children, but then in the mid-50s switched over to what became swamp pop, and we'll talk about why in a second. Where did it originate? Originated in South Louisiana and, importantly, in East Texas, where you had a lot of Cajuns and Black Creoles living. Swamp pop only comes from where Cajuns and Black Creoles live, but you remember there's this big population of Cajuns and Creoles really stretching all the way into Houston, but swamp pop was mainly in the Beaumont, Port Arthur, Orange area in the Acadiana region of South Louisiana on both sides of the Atchafalaya River, but mainly in South Central and Southwest Louisiana. And then we already went into what did it sound like. But I want to play four clips for you to show how there was this interplay between Cajun, Zydeco, and swamp pop, and how these teenage Cajuns and Creoles who made swamp pop, you know, they didn't get together and say, let's make a type of music that combines all these influences. They just did it. They didn't think about it. But they weren't able to jettison all of that cultural baggage, especially since so many of them had played this more traditional music beforehand. So the first clip I'm going to play is the very first Cajun song ever recorded, Alonzo Lafayette. But then I'm going to play the swamp pop version of it by Randy and the Rockets, who were from, was it Abbeville or New Iberia? And so let me play that for you right now. Now here's the Randy and the Rocket version.
Let's go to Lafayette and do the beach on twist. We'll twist with Shirley Blonde and twist all night long. We'll go to Grandcourt Door and eat some good gumbo. Then go to Timor Reef and do the beach on twist.
So, Johnny,
same melody.
You said something interesting that Joe Falcon, the you know, pioneer.
My great uncle, my grandfather's brother. Yeah.
You grew up in a musical family with some pretty impressive lineage.
Well,
there.
Well, actually, my mother played guitar with him. My aunt played guitar with him, and my grandfather, Joe's brother, played the fiddle with his brother. So it was kind of a Falcon family deal.
Whereas in our family, nobody played music, and then all of a sudden, you and your brother, Oscar, both took up music, oddly enough. The Hippie Tayo clip by Bobby Page and the Riff Raps is kind of long because I wanted you to hear a little bit of the guitar solo in it because it's worth hearing, and it's part of what makes it swamp pop. This is the Bro Brothers from Abbeville. Basically a rock and roll version of a Cajun song. Another example is the song you did in the early 60s, Kalinda. Kalinda is an old song, and I wrote a paper with Professor Frederick at UL in the history department about how it came from a dance originating on the west coast of Africa and made it to the Afro-Caribbean world in New Orleans. And Let me play two versions of Kalinda. The first is a traditional Cajun version by Doc Guidry, and then Dad's version.
Alors danse Kalinda, alors danse Kalinda, prends ta mère et par là pour faire fâcher les vivants. Pas tout le monde qu'a dansé, tous les vivants ça de temps. Allons danser, Kalinda. Allons danser, Kalinda. Allons danser, Kalinda. On entend Mary Pala. Fais pas chez les vieux bons. Si pas tout le monde a dansé, tous les vieux bons et d'entendre. On entend Mary Pala. Allons danser, Kalinda.
Then I want to show you how it also works in the opposite direction. Those were examples of how Cajun songs could become swamp pop songs. This next example shows you how a swamp pop song can become a Cajun song. And this is Jimmy Clanton, who I don't even think was from Louisiana, was he? He was from Mississippi?
Jimmy was from Golden Meadow originally.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, that explains it.
Another sleepless night, I sit alone and cry. Twilight time till dawn, memories linger on. Since we said goodbye, throughout that sleepless night.
And then this is the guy who played accordion on Promise Me, Belton Reichardt. exact same melody. And, you know, I mentioned that the mass of swamp pop musicians were teenage Cajuns and Creoles. And if you look at this list, you know, a lot of them used Anglo-American stage names, which is, you know, not unheard of anywhere in the country. You had people changing, you know, Italian surnames to Anglo stage names.
Can you imagine DJs away from here trying to pronounce Giat?
So I've heard it from at least one source claim that you guys changed your last names because you were ashamed of your Cajun culture. What is your reaction?
Not really. No, I don't think so, Shane. I think we just picked names that this jock, because we knew the DJs away from here could have pronounced. I never felt any shame for my Cajun heritage. Maybe some of the others did, but I never did.
So your real name is John Allen Giat.
Giat.
And if you look at these names, Joe Barry was Joe Barrio.
Right.
Bobby Charles was Robert Charles Guidry. Doug Charles, the original leader of the Boogie Kings, his actual name was Doug Ardoin. John Fred, who after, well, he went on to play sort of Beatles-esque music with Judy in Disguise, but before that, he was strictly swamp pop. John Fred Gurrier was his name. Guitar Gable is and King Carl, his partner, were black Creole musicians. They were Gabriel Perraudin and Bernard Jolivet. Alfred Babineau is the real name of little Alfred, and so on. There's one name up there that's kind of sticks out, and that's Baldomar Huerta. And Dad, or maybe y'all can both explain, how did this Hispanic...
Baldomar
Huerta.
Freddie.
How did Freddie Fender end up... As a swamp pop musician.
Well, if you look at his name.
But how did this guy from the Rio Grande Valley of Texas end up as a swamp pop musician?
Well, you know, Freddie lived here in Louisiana. I mean, he lived in Kinder, and
Angola,
he played quite a bit in Louisiana years back when we were.
He also served some time here, didn't he?
Yeah, he likes to say that he became a farmer. He took up agriculture at Angola State Prison. All for one joint of marijuana.
But he played in the French Quarter with Joe Barry for a long time. And
even fact is, when he got out of Angola, Joe Barry was playing in the French Quarter somewhere, and he went up to, Freddie wasn't supposed to be in there because, I mean, you know, he was out on parole. And he went up to the stage. He said, hey, Joe, Freddie Fender. No, it's Baldomar Huerta. Joe, it's me, Baldomar Huerta. And Joe was probably three sheets in the wind by that time. He said, I don't know no Baltimore Walter.
Didn't Freddie even cut, after he became big, he cut an entire album of swamp pop songs just sort of as an acknowledgement from as
well, you know, Shane, if memory serves me right, Wasted Days and Wasted Nights was recorded years ago by him. Mm-hmm. I mean, before it, under the name of Galen Christie, I think. Another name that he used, an alias.
Yeah. What are your memories of some of these clubs? Now, how far away did you guys play from your hometowns, for example?
Up until about 19... Oh, I got to think a minute there. Up until about 1970... I want to say around the mid-1970s. I concentrated, Friday nights. Every other Friday was at the River Club in Murmantau. Saturday nights was the Jungle Lounge in Ville Platte. And Sunday night was at the Green Lantern in Lawtell. And that went on for about, my gosh, I guess about 8 years. And then I quit music for a while. And when I came back to it, I was working at Boo Boo's nightclub on the Brobridge Highway. And this guy, Wilson LeBlanc, I'll never forget his name, he said, Johnny, you need to venture away from here. He said, people in down south Louisiana, LaForge Parish, Terrebonne Parish, et cetera, et cetera. He said, your music plays all the time on the jukeboxes. I said, I don't know anybody out there. He says, well, I do. He says, I'll get you booked. Said, okay. The first night was at a dump, really. And I'm Mr. Hebert is still alive, I think. No offense spoken, you know, but the place really was just a rundown place in Pierreport. They had so many people there that night that they were actually standing on tables. There was no standing room on the floor. They were standing on tables. You couldn't dance. And I looked at that. I says, hey, Wilson was right. You know, maybe there is something to it. The next night we played in Sorrento at Kramer's Club, and it was the same thing, packed again. These people actually were swamp pop music lovers, and I didn't know about it. Rod, did you? I mean, you ever played, you worked some gigs down in South Louisiana. I'm sure you feel the same way, too. I mean, I was not aware that away from Mermentau, Lautel, Ville Platte, just a little area in here, that people really liked this kind of music. I was extremely surprised, and from then on, I stayed booked out there for quite a while until I just retired from the music business. And then, like Cher, I came back again.
Johnny, you told me a great story about the time you played in Pierreport and what happened when you drove into town. Do you remember that? That there were people waiting for you on the sides of the road?
Oh, yeah.
Could you tell that story?
Wait. No, I don't recall that. I thought you were referring to something else. No.
You told me that you played in, it was either Belle River or Pierreport, and when you got to town, this is when you did this, you jokingly called it your tour, that you went through Ascension Parish on this tour, and the girls were waiting for you on the outside of town, and they followed your car to the...
Oh, I know what you're referring to, yeah.
And your wife's not here tonight, so we can tell.
Yours is, though. Just keep quiet. What it was at a place called Dulac.
Oh, yeah.
And it was mostly, the clientele there was mostly Sabines. And I told the guys in the band before we left, I says, I'm warning you before we get there. I said, do not, and I want to capitalize this, do not talk to any of their women. And I said, don't even look at them. Play your music. Well, after we got through with the gig, this good-looking lady came up and she grabbed my arm, you know. She wanted to dance. I said, no, ma'am, I'm sorry, I don't know how to dance. I says, I live on a bandstand all my life. I never did learn how to dance. And she kept pulling me. I turned around and I looked, and there's this humongous guy coming towards me. I said, oh, Lord. I turned around and looked at the guys in the band. I said, you see what I'm talking about? I said, please, y'all gather around me, protect me, do something. Well, he grabbed the lady and threw her against the wall. And I'm looking at that and said, I wonder why he did it. Well, he turned around and he looked at me. He says, I saw what you did. He said, she was begging you to go dance and you refused her. He says, you're not to blame. Okay, that was one episode that night. Two of my musicians were standing outside and just talking, getting ready. And the roaders were still loading up to come back. And somebody threw a beer can at somebody else that was standing outside, and they thought it was my two musicians. Well, it started. I had a van in those days. When I sold that van, it was with a brand new rear view mirror, and the footprint that guy kicked was still there. I never got it painted. We took off, and I had a CB radio, luckily. Those guys took off after us. And I mean, one of them was outside, and we could see he had a gun in his hand. And I said, oh, Lord. So I got on the phone and I called, you know, emergency, somebody, if somebody's on their frequency with the police department, please, you know, and I explained where we were. And thank goodness there was a patrol car, deputy sheriff patrol car, in the vicinity. When we got about, I guess, about 2 or 3 miles from Houma, I saw the lights come on, and they stopped the guys. I said,
"Whew. Why didn't
thank
you just
you.
Get out
the next
it?
Time we played there, the guy called me back. I says, oh, no, I'm not going back. He said, look, I promise you it won't happen again. All right. The next time we got there, there was a deputy sheriff, a lady, outside. He was assigned outside to look after our vehicles. And, buddy, if ever I get in trouble, I want her on my side. Because nobody came close to the van and the trailer hauling the instruments. I mean, she was tough. Now, we walked inside the place, and there's two humongous deputies, one on each side of the bandstand. There. We didn't have any problems that night.
And if you're just joining us here for Encore, we're listening to an interview from CSET's In Your Own Backyard series that they have at Vermilionville every Tuesday night. And this is the Swamp Pop interview that they did with, that was Johnny Allen just now speaking. Rod Bernard is also there, and Shane Bernard, Rod Bernard's son. And this coming Tuesday, they are having, like they always do, another In Your Own Backyard series every second Tuesday of the month. And this one is on Louisiana in film, fact, and fiction. And Glenn Pete and Michelle Benoit will both be there talking about different documentaries and major motion pictures that have been filmed in Louisiana or about Louisiana, and the challenges of presenting the state's people and the culture accurately and honestly. So that ought to be really interesting. If you love film, you're sure to enjoy that. And if you've never met Glenn Pete and Michelle Benoit, I think that'll be really awesome, too, to go there and listen to them speak and be able to meet them afterwards. We're going to continue with the interview, and Shane is going to talk a little bit about who used to produce, who back in the day produced swamp music mostly, and what their expectations were for the music they were recording. And then we'll get to a couple more stories from Rod.
The guys who were producing this music and releasing it on records were local record producers like J.D. Miller and Crowley, Carol Raschew here in Lafayette, whose studio is still there, La Louisiana on, is it Stevenson Street?
Stevenson,
right,
yeah.
By mm-hmm. UL campus. Floyd Swallow in Ville Platte, who had the Gin label. Huey Moe in Houston, Lee Laverne in Church Point, and so on. And these small town record men would back these local musicians, put their records out on 45, and hope that it would take off outside of this area, and fairly often it did. And you even had people as far away as Shreveport producing swamp pop records on the Ram label and Jewel and Paula and these other labels. Swamp pop is mainly a regional phenomenon. It is popular along much of the Gulf Coast and into Texas, but its core audience is here. But still, there has been at least some slight influence by swamp pop on music nationally and even internationally. And sometimes you can hear the swamp pop sound in songs by, you know, major recording artists. And I have here three extreme examples of how swamp pop has influenced mainstream music. You had the Rolling Stones on one of their early albums record "Oh Baby, We Got a Good Thing Going" by Barbara Lynn, whose real name is Barbara Lynn Ozine from Karen Crow, although she lived in Beaumont, Port Arthur area for a long time. The Honey Drippers with Robert Plant, the leader of Led Zeppelin, did "Sea of Love," which is a swamp pop song written and recorded originally by Phil Phillips, whose real name is Phil Batiste from Jennings. And then you have the Beatles' Oh Darling, and I don't know, nobody knows for a fact that this is based on Swamp Pop, but it sure does sound like it.
Oh, darling.
I wrote to Paul McCartney one time to ask him if there was any connection, and he never answered me. So, but John Fred and the Playboys, when they were in London in 1968, met John, Paul, and George, and got into a musical discussion with them. And John Fred told me, I have this on audio tape, he said, you know, those guys knew the song Irene by King Carl and Guitar Gable. And he said, man, I thought this song had never left Mamou, and here they knew about it. So maybe there is some connection. And, you know, the Beatles played in New Orleans with, I think, Fats Domino was on their show. So they were certainly knew about South Louisiana music. Dad, could you tell me about the first time you played in front of an audience? Wasn't that at a feed and seed store?
Yeah, and in Opelousas, Mr. Felix Desarche had a big feed store, and he played harmonica, and he was quite a showman. And every Saturday morning, he'd have a radio program, and he took part of the warehouse and cordoned it off, and he painted it blue and called it the Blue Room, and put a stage on it like this. And we did shows every morning at 6:45 until 7:15, and then on Saturday mornings, 6:45 till 7:15, and then from 10 until 10:30 a.m.
Now, this was just on weekends, or this was every morning?
Yeah, during the week. Well, during the week, early in the morning before school, and then on Saturdays, all day. We just sang around there all day.
So the purpose was to promote his feed and seed store and his sweet potato brand, Redbird, as I recall, right?
Right.
And your parents brought you there one day, and what happened the first time you played there? You don't remember?
I don't know.
You just told me they put you on some feed sacks.
So yeah, well,
you got to realize that we're old.
Microphones down as low as they could go, and it still was taller than me. So they put some feed sacks down, and I stood on the feed sacks, and then I could reach the microphone, and I sang Jambalaya on KSLO, and that was the first time I ever sang on the radio. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I have a recording of Jambalaya that you did around age 10. You probably don't want me to play this, but I'm going to play it anyway. This is from a one-of-a-kind 78 RPM acetate. There was only, you know, one made. And this is Dad at around age 10, backed by the Blue Room Gang. And I don't think I've ever played this in public before.
Yeah, Rodney Bernard singing Jambalaya.
So how did you switch from playing?
I'm so glad you have that.
So how did you switch from playing that kind of music to what became called Swamp Pop? I mean, what drove you to do that?
That was, of course, country and western. It was Hank Williams. It was what kind of music I liked the best. Kind of music I started playing first when I was about 6 years old. And then when I was about 15 or 16 is when Elvis came along and Chuck Berry came along and Fats Domino and Lloyd Price and people like that. And then we formed a little band and we started playing those same type of songs that they were playing.
The band was called what? The name of the band?
The Twisters.
Yeah. Which had nothing to do with the dance, by the way, right?
Had nothing to do with the dance.
You were thinking of Tornadoes, right? This was because this was before the dance. This was like 1958.
Yeah, it was before you were born.
Yeah, right. Johnny, as I recall, you told me that a live performance by a certain musician in Shreveport really influenced you, jumping from Cajun music with Lawrence Walker, because you had switched from Walter Mouton to Lawrence Walker. And tell me about that.
Well, wait a minute. You said something about Shreveport?
Well, you saw a performance.
I saw a performance. The one and only time I ever saw Elvis in person was at the Louisiana Hayride. And I had never heard of Elvis Presley. You know, fact is, he played Heartbreak Hotel that night, and he said he was leaving after the show to go to Nashville to record the song. Well, the guy got up there, and I can't remember. I mean, this is 1956, I think, or 55. I can't remember who the other artists. All I know is that Webb Pierce, Farron Young, and I could go on and name just big names in country music at that time. I mean, these guys were the superstars of country music. When Elvis got up there, he put them all down. I mean, the place just went wild. And we were on an FFA convention. The guys that were with me, I told them, I said, I've never heard of this guy, but I'm predicting that he's going to be a big name in the music business. The girls in there just wouldn't stop screaming. And that's an indication, you know, that something big is about to happen. And I was right.
So what happened after you went home from that, didn't you?
Well, you know, I started listening to Heartbreak Hotel and some of his songs that he had recorded before that. And by that time, this is like 1956 or 57, I had started playing rock and roll music. Or I hadn't recorded yet, but I started playing rock and roll music. Like Rod said, you know, Lloyd Price, Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, et cetera, et cetera. But I also included some Elvis Presley songs in there because I could see that this guy was headed for stardom. And the girls liked his songs.
That was Johnny Allen talking about the first time he ever saw Elvis and how that inspired him and how he claims that he predicted Elvis was going to be famous. And that was at CSET, the Center for Cultural and Ecotourism's In Your Own Backyard series. That takes place every second Tuesday at Vermilionville. It'll be happening this Tuesday, September 11th, 2012. And it starts at 6:30 and it ends at 8:30 p.m. And it'll be about Louisiana in film, fact, and fiction. And Glenn Pete and Michelle Benoit will be there speaking, and it should be really awesome. Again, it takes place at Vermilionville in the Performance Center at 6:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. And another event coming up on CSET's calendar on September 15th, this coming Saturday, is their Archive Aid, and it is the ninth year that they do it. It's a fundraiser for the Cajun and Creole Archives, and there will be a lot of great bands performing at the Blue Moon. For the Archive Aid, it starts at 7 o'clock, and it's a great occasion to go out and have a lot of fun and do some good by supporting the archives at the same time. So I hope to see you all there. We're going to go out with one more story from Rod Bernard, and it's about one of the times he went to jail when he was really young, and then we'll listen to one song to finish it up by The Revelers, and it's called I Don't Want to Go Home, and Eric Fry sings it. And Rod was speaking earlier in the interview that he doesn't like to hear people talk about Swamp Pop as being dead, and I hope no one's offended by this, but I think this is one of the songs that comes really close to maybe a modern Swamp Pop. It's a mix of rock and roll, and they were all inspired by different types of music, rock and roll and Cajun music, and I think it's kind of ground in Cajun music. It was written by Eric, so I think his aim was rock, but I would call it Swamp Pop, or really close, and it's a really good song, so we'll listen to this story about Rod Bernard going to jail, and then we'll finish it off with the Revelers, I Don't Want to Go Home. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you next week.
Before I open the floor up for questions from the audience, since y'all two are together, I want you to tell the story about how you got arrested in New Orleans when he borrowed your car.
Do we have to?
But I've never heard your side of the story.
Rod.
We got to Pensacola about 2:00 in the afternoon, and we were playing a big show that night at the auditorium in Pensacola. So we went walking downtown. We walked into a pawn shop, look at what you look at in a pawn shop. And there was a beautiful 38 automatic revolve, no, 38 automatic. It had a pearl handle on it, and it was silver. And, man, I wanted that gun bad, you know. And so I told the guy, I said, I want to buy that pistol. It was brand new in a holster, in a box, never been fired, and didn't have any bullets for it. And so when he said, fine, so then he asked for my ID, and when I showed him my driver's license, he says, wait a minute, you're 18 years old. He said, you have to be 21 in Florida to buy a gun.
I take that back. I was 21. I was lying for my age.
Yeah, you were. And so I was all disappointed, and Johnny said, well, I'll get it for you. You know, I'm 21. I'll get it for you. I said, okay, so I gave him the money, so he bought the gun. I said, what about registering it? And the guy said, when y'all get back to Louisiana, you can register it. Don't worry about it. So he made the ticket out, Johnny Allen, Guillot, whatever it was on his driver's license, and sold it to him. So I had a brand-new Oldsmobile convertible I just bought, and I took it and I put it in the glove compartment. And I couldn't wait to get home because I'd like to go out in the woods and just shoot, like a lot of men around here do, and women too, just shoot. So when we got to New Orleans, we rehearsed that afternoon with Dr. John. After I got through rehearsing, we were all standing outside with Larry Williams, the guy that made Boney Maroney and Short Fat Fanny, and Frankie Ford, I think, and my band, and Johnny.
I wasn't there. I was at my...
We were talking about...
I missed that.
We were talking about hunting and fishing. And I said, boy, I bought a pistol yesterday that's really beautiful. I'm going to show it to y'all. So as I was walking in my car, Johnny walked up to me, and he said, best I can remember, he said, can I borrow your car? I want to go see my nanan or somebody in my family that lives not far from here. And I said, sure, you know. So I gave him the keys, and I took the box out of the glove compartment. And I walked up to the side of the municipal auditorium, and I opened the box, and we were standing like in a circle. There were about 10 of us. And I took the gun out, and again, it was unloaded, no bullets, never been fired, brand new. But I took it out, and I was showing it to the people standing in the circle, and we were all oohing and aahing over my pistol. Well, a security officer at the back door saw these 8 or 10 teenage boys standing in a circle with a pistol, which you don't do in New Orleans. And all of a sudden, we heard sirens coming, police coming from every direction. Johnny, in the meantime, left with my car. So the police walk right up to us and start searching us. So Ray Thomasy was the drummer in my band, and he happened to be holding the pistol, and not knowing any better, I said, "Ray, hide that pistol. Don't let him see it." So he put it in his belt and covered it with his shirt, which made it a concealed weapon. So when the policemen got there, they started doing this. You know, I said, "Ray, give him the gun." You know, so Ray gave him the gun. I said, "Officers, it's mine." You know, he said, "Let me see your registration." I said, "Well, we don't have a registration. I just bought it yesterday." And the man told us to register it when we get back in Louisiana. He said, "Well, you in Louisiana?" I said, "Yeah, but we're going to do it when we get back home to Opelousas, you know." He said, "Who are you going to kill with this?" I said, "We're not going to kill anybody with that." I said, "Well, he said, what you going to do with that?" I said, "I was going to hunt with it." He said, "You don't hunt with a 38 automatic." I said, "We do in Opelousas, you know. Hunt with anything, you know." And so he said, "Where are the bullets?" I said, "I don't have any." "You were going to rob some store." I said, "No, we're not going to rob a store." And then they got really mean with us. And to this day, I'm not too brave around New Orleans policemen. They hit us with billy clubs and hit us in places that hurt with billy clubs and made us get into a police car and brought us on down to the first precinct. And they, just like on TV, they brought me in this room with this light shining on my face and start questioning me all these questions over and over and over. "Where'd you get the gun? Where did you steal the gun? Where are the bullets?" Then they said, "Okay, I said, "It's in a, everything is, the papers are in a box in my car." I said, "Where's your car?" I said, "I don't know." And they said, "What do you mean you don't know?" I said, "I loaned it to Johnny Allen." He said, "Johnny Allen?" I said, "Wait, that's not his real name." So it kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And I kept digging a deeper hole. I kept digging a deeper hole. And I had on some pink and black shoes. I'll never forget that. And a pink shirt that was a hip colors back in the 50s. A pair of black pants and a pink stripe down the back. So the guys at the bar, "Wait till they get you in Angola this weekend. They're going to have fun with you this weekend in Angola." I said, "What are you talking about, Angola?" You know? And so they put us all in a jail cell. And after we all cried, I'll never forget, there was a guy in the jail cell. And I said, what you in here for?" He said, "Suspicion." I said, "Suspicion of what?" He said, "Suspicion of being suspicious." It's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. I said, "Man, if they put him in jail for suspicion of being suspicious, what they gonna do to us with a gun?"